Welcome to American Soundways. I'm your host, Trip Clark. Let's head northwest to a town that's become one of the real hotbeds for emerging indie rock artists, and a town where one of its homegrown bands was once the target of an FBI investigation. We'll talk with blues guitarist Kelly Joe Phelps, and we'll listen to some classic artists from the past, as well as some talented and up-and-coming artists. That's all coming up on American Soundways. This American town is considered a shining example of excellent urban planning. Among its many nicknames are Stumptown, River City, and Bridgetown. It also boasts more breweries than any other city in the world, which is the reason for its other nickname, Beervana. There was a time when it was about the worst place to be if you happened to be in a bar and had a little too much to drink. And it's the birthplace of the creator of one of America's favorite families.
Okay.
We're headed to the Pacific Northwest, to the City of Roses, Portland, Oregon. Over the course of the next hour, we're going to traverse the musical highways and byways of Portland, Oregon. But first, let's listen to a song with a connection to Portland, and then later on we'll tie it all together. Here's Ben Folds with Late on American Soundways.
Under some dirty words on a dirty wall, eating takeout by myself, I played the shows, got back in the van and put the Walkman on, and you were playing. Some other dive a thousand miles away, I played a thousand times before. And like pathetic stars, the truck stops and the rock club walls, I always knew you saw them too, but you never will again. It's too late. Don't you know it's been too late for a long time. Elliot, man, you played a fine guitar and some dirty basketball. Songs you wrote got me through a lot. Just wanna tell you that, but it's too late. It's too late. No, don't you know it's been too late for a long. Oh no, things were looking up, at least that's what I heard. Oh no, someone came and washed away your hard-earned peace of mind. Desperate static beats the silence up. A quiet truth to calm you down. The songs you wrote got me through a lot. Just wanna tell you that. But it's too late.
It's too late.
Back in the mid-1800s, Tennessee drifter William Overton and Massachusetts lawyer Asa Lovejoy came across a beautiful stretch of land along the Willamette River. Rich with timber and beautiful mountains, Overton decided it was a good place to stake his claim. But Overton didn't have the 25 cents that it cost to file a land claim. So he made a deal with Lovejoy that in exchange for the 25-cent loan, he'd share the pristine 640-acre site. Overton's patience with clearing trees, however, was short-lived, and he sold his half of the land to Francis W. Pettigrove of Portland, Maine. The two gentlemen needed to settle on a name, so they flipped a coin. Lovejoy, being from Boston, wanted to name it after his hometown. And Pettigrove, being from Portland, Maine, wanted to name it after his. Two out of three tosses, and you can guess who won. In the late 1800s, Portland earned a reputation as a rough place to be if you happened to get drunk in a bar. The practice of shanghaiing was one of the methods used by ship captains to recruit ship hands and a way for bar owners to make some extra money. Hotel operators and bar owners would get unsuspecting young men drunk and then drop them through openings in the floor called deadfalls. They would then be carried through underground tunnels and held in cells until the ship was ready to sail or brought directly onto the ship, only to wake up in the middle of the Pacific, where they would essentially be enslaved labor. One of the more provocative characters in Portland's history is Sweet Marie.
Sweet Marie, she came walking up to me.
An entrepreneurial madam who operated her brothel on a barge which floated up and down the Willamette River, allowing her to evade city laws and avoid paying taxes. A couple of early music pioneers in Portland are Ballard McDonald and George Olson, both of whom are in the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Ballard was born in Portland and later moved to New York, where he would become a successful songwriter and lyricist. He scored a number of Broadway musicals and collaborated with some of the greatest composers of the day, like Gershwin and Victor Herbert. Although he is best known for writing the lyrics to the official state song of Ohio, George Olson was a popular band leader and singer and released nearly 50 top 20 singles in the 20s and 30s. Singer and actress Jane Powell was born in Portland in 1929. Her talents were obvious at a young age. She had her own radio show when she was just 11 and was signed to a contract with MGM at 16. One of her most memorable roles was as Millie in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. From nightclubs to radio to film to theater to television, Jane Powell has been a much-loved part of the American entertainment business. Lorraine Geller, born Lorraine Walsh in Portland, was a rising, talented jazz pianist whose life was tragically cut short. Early in her career, she played in an all-female big band called the Sweethearts of Rhythm. She married jazz saxophone player Herb Geller and moved to Los Angeles, where she became a staple in the West Coast jazz scene, playing alongside jazz greats such as Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Shorty Rogers, and Zoot Sims, just to name a few. She even backed up the great controversial comic Lenny Bruce, who fancied himself an oral jazz man during his burlesque gigs. Lorraine had just recorded a series of albums with her husband when she died unexpectedly at the young age of 30. Her husband, Herb, was so grief-stricken by her death that he left the country. Other significant Portland artists in the jazz community include trombonist Rod Levitt, freestyle saxophonist Marco Anady, Dixieland cornet player Ernie Carson, jazz pianist and composer Tom Grant, and Glenn Moore, one of the founding members of the successful New Age jazz band Oregon. Daryl Adams is an important traditional folk artist who really never developed the kind of name recognition of many of his contemporaries or of the many artists whom he influenced, most famous among them being Donovan. Adams himself was influenced by the great blues guitarist Josh White, as well as Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger, and decided to take up guitar and banjo. His first hit, Portland Town, has been covered by artists from Marianne Faithfull to the Kingston Trio, as well as his musical companion of many years, Ramblin' Jack Elliott, whose version of Portland Town is heard here. Adams was a purist when it came to folk music and became disenchanted with the widening appeal of the genre and of those who tended to take it less seriously than maybe they should. He spent most of his career in Europe and was certainly more widely known there than he ever was in the U.S. Daryl Adams died in Antwerp, Belgium in 2000. A contemporary artist from Portland, Matt Ward, who goes by the stage name of M. Ward, is as sparse and traditional musically as almost anyone out there. His music is haunting and sad and beautiful and reminiscent of a sound that may have emanated from somewhere in the Midwest circa 1920. M. Ward doesn't write a lot of radio-friendly music, but what he does write is twice as captivating. Let's listen to Paul's song from M. Ward's release Transistor Radio on American Soundways.
Seems like everywhere I go, the sky is falling. And of course he is, I'll meet you with a frown. When I come to town, I ain't gonna lie to you. Well, every town is all the same. You say, how does it feel to be traveling? How's it feel to live your life on the train and the aeroplane? Well, I ain't gonna lie to you. Well, every town is all the same. When you've left your heart in the pouring rain, and how I wish it was not true, but I ain't gonna stand up here and lie to you. I believe y'all deserve more than that. And if there's one thing that I've learned, brother, you gonna get burned if you don't know where your love is at.
Connected. Are you down with all the latest trends?
To keep up with friends, well, I ain't gonna lie to you. Well, every plan is all the same. Seems like everywhere I go, the sky is falling. And the waitresses all meet you with a frown. When I come to town, I ain't gonna lie to you. Well, every town is all the same. When you've left your heart in a Portland rain.
Where is it you'll find the names Bart, Quimby, Flanders, and Kearney, as well as Evergreen Terrace and a nuclear power plant, although one is now decommissioned? If you're thinking Springfield, you're right. And if you're thinking Portland, you're also right. One is the longest-running animated television series in history, The Simpsons, and the other is the hometown of Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons. Born and raised in Portland, Oregon in 1954, Matt Groening has used much of his childhood experiences to create the backdrop and storyline for his successful animated family. Although now living in L.A., Groening spent his first 23 years in Portland and claims to still be an Oregonian at heart. Portland in the 60s saw a couple of influential bands make their mark there. A true product of the Northwest, Paul Revere and the Raiders brought together the talents of pianist Paul Revere, born in Nebraska, raised in Idaho, and singer Mark Lindsay, also from Idaho. A couple of Paul Revere's biggest influences were Jerry Lee Lewis and Spike Jonze, which accounted for the boogie-woogie sound heard in their early music and the odd sense of humor that became part of the band's signature stage presence. Revere and Lindsay began playing together as the Downbeats, but then changed their name to Paul Revere and the Raiders just prior to recording some of their early songs, one of which entered the charts in March of 1961. Things seemed to be going pretty well for the band when Paul Revere was drafted. Interestingly enough, during his absence, a very young Leon Russell took over at keyboards. The band soon dissolved, and Lindsey headed off to California. And Revere, after having been granted conscientious objector status because of his Mennonite religious beliefs, ended up as a cook in a mental institution in Wilsonville, Oregon. The band came back together in Portland in 1962 and quickly became one of the most popular bands in the Northwest. In early 1963, the Raiders recorded a song that would go down in music infamy. Unfortunately, just not their version.
Right, you woman! It's a Louie Louie time! Yeah, right.
Paul Revere and the Raiders recorded Louie Louie a week before the Kingsmen went into the same studio and recorded it. Executives at Columbia signed the Raiders, but it was the Kingsmen's version that became the standard. The group continued to be a popular draw in the Northwest, but weren't able to replicate their earlier chart success. They then were put under the leadership of Terry Melcher, popular rock and roll producer and son of Doris Day. Melcher refined their sound and got them booked as the house band for a new Dick Clark TV show called Where the Action Is. The new sound and exposure helped them land their first charted single in 4 years with the song Steppin' Out, a song with more punk leanings than their earlier material and more appeal to white suburbia. In an attempt to separate themselves from the competition, they decided to wear Revolutionary War-style outfits, and the look and the sound was complete. In 1966 and 1967, the hits Just Like Me, Hungry, Good Thing, Him or Me, What's It Gonna Be, and Kicks were all soon top 10 hits.
Inside. When you come back down, girl, still ain't feeling right. Don't it seem like
kids just keep getting harder to find? And all your kids ain't bringing you peace of mind. Before you find out it's too late, girl, you better get straight.
No, you're not with kids. You just need help, girl. A little piece of paradise, but it ain't happened yet. So, girl, you better think twice. Don't you see? No matter what you do, you'll never run away from you. And if you keep on running, you'll have to pay the price. And don't it seem like
it's just getting harder to find? And all your kids ain't bringing you peace of mind. Before you find out it's too late, girl, you better get straight.
No, you don't need kids to help you face the world each day. That road goes nowhere. I'm gonna help you find yourself another way.
Kids just keep getting harder to find.
You don't need
all your kids,
girl.
Bringing you peace of mind.
Just
before
need
you
help,
find
girl.
Out it's too late,
girl.
You better get straight.
Don't it seem like
kids just keep getting harder to find?
You don't need
all your kids.
The years following that flurry of hits saw mediocre chart success through the end of the 60s. In the summer of 1971, Paul Revere and the Raiders scored their first and last number one hit with the song Indian Reservation.
Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe, so proud you live, so proud.
Indian Reservation sold nearly 3 million singles. By now, Mark Lindsey had begun to pursue solo projects, and with differing opinions for the creative direction of the band, by 1975, Paul Revere and Mark Lindsey and the rest of the band members had gone their separate ways. If there was ever a song that should rightfully hold the title as the preeminent frat song, Louie Louie by Portland's The Kingsmen is it. The song that has been covered by everybody from Motorhead to Frank Zappa to Pete Fountain and Barry White was the one and only major hit for The Kingsmen. Written by Richard Berry and previously performed by Berry, the Wailers, Paul Revere and the Raiders, and virtually every other band in the Northwest, The Kingsmen's version found its way to the East Coast, where some controversy began to swirl about its lyrics. There are a number of different versions as to why the lyrics are so distorted: bad mic placement, the lead singer wearing braces on his teeth, or just being hungover. And some say the band actually thought they were rehearsing on the track that was recorded. Or there's the one that the FBI believed, that the lyrics were actually laced with suggestive words and vulgarity aimed at corrupting America's youth. Brought on by the complaints of parents, J. Edgar Hoover launched an FBI investigation into Louie Louie and whether it violated federal obscenity laws. It was rumored that if you played the 45 at 33 and a third, you could actually decipher the obscenities. After a more than two-year investigation, it was determined that they were unable to identify any violations, and the Kingsmen have been reaping the benefits of the controversy ever since. Stick around, we'll be right back with more American Soundways. We'll be right back.